What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We're going to connect here in a minute with Andy McCarthy. But before we do, President Biden, 1 week from stepping down while Donald Trump comes in and gets inaugurated, he'll be president at this time next week. He is giving one final foreign policy speech from the State Department. Let's put this off. Let's pause the State Department speech. We'll get back to that because I think he's doing some formalities here. The Antony Blinken conversation was kind of some backpacking. This is what they're going to do. It is what it is. But I want to set up here. Can we go to Biden?
Yeah.
Every time I say let's go to Biden, Andy McCarthy calls us back.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. It's just blinking lights everywhere.
Yeah.
It's fun to be in a studio, ladies and gentlemen.
There's so much going on here. I'm going to play this clip here from Charlemagne talking about the Trump sentencing from last week.
What a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a waste of time. Pure political theater. They was never, ever going to convict a former or sitting president of nothing. And what was even more ridiculous was watching, liberals celebrate this. Like, this is not a win. Who cares if you can call him a convicted felon when you still got to call him president for the next 4 years? Who cares?
So Charlemagne is saying, talking about the sentencing and saying it was a profound waste of time. We do have the convicted 34 felonies in that Alvin Bragg case and now a sentencing from this past week. And you have to ask yourself, what for? What was this? What was all this for when the sentencing comes down? And it's like, basically, thank you for your time. You're free to go. Let's ask our friend Andy McCarthy, contributing editor at National Review, a Fox News contributor, host of The McCarthy Report. Andy, thank you for the time today. It's good to have you back.
Annie, it's my pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. 1 week from this moment right now, we will have a President Trump. But last Friday, we have convicted felon Trump. We've talked to you many times about the sentencing being a requirement to be referred to as a convicted felon. What's your reaction to that sentencing this past week?
Well, I mean, in the end, it's much ado about nothing because they spent the whole campaign calling him a convicted felon. I understand. And probably because I was a prosecutor for a long time, and also because, like any other person who gets to be, you know, a certain age, if you've lived your whole life without a criminal conviction, that's something you're proud of and you want to maintain. So I certainly understand why, personally, at the age of 78, President Trump didn't want to be branded a convicted felon in a formal official way. But if, you know, that's his personal feeling about it, which I have a lot of sympathy for. But in the greater scheme of things, it really doesn't seem to make much difference because they called him a convicted felon throughout the campaign and he won.
Yeah.
And in the end, this thing was not a one-off. This case was part of a crusade against him that was coordinated among Democrats, Democratic political operatives, and Democratic prosecutors. So I don't think you can look at it as one isolated thing and say what was the point, because it was all part of one big assault on him. But the point, the major fallout of it is it failed. He's going to become president, and the small thing that I guess matters is, as you just pointed out, Annie, the sentencing is the thing he had to go through to end the case in the lower court. And he will, I think he will only be a convicted felon until he gets appellate review, at which point this case will get thrown out. So for his, from his standpoint, as long as his lawyers can go about challenging the case on appeal, then the sooner they get on with it, the better.
So Andy McCarthy speaking with us right now. My understanding is you're kind of saying there that you can't appeal until the sentencing is complete.
Right.
So now President Trump is in a, he's one step closer to exonerating himself by going through that appeal process. Is he going to be treated like any other citizen through the appeal process? He's the president. Does it get expedited? What happens next?
Well, you know, I think people are down you know, there's a good reason to be suspicious on New York's court system. But I would say, you know, having been a New Yorker, you know, born and bred and observed that system for a long time, even though I was a federal prosecutor and spent my career in the federal system, you know, I had to interact with the state system in criminal cases and even civil cases a lot of times. The quality of justice tends to get better as you go up the chain in the system. You just get better appointments, generally speaking, in the appellate level. And then, of course, the Court of Appeals is the highest court in the state. I forget how many they have, seven judges. But so I do think he'll do okay in the New York system. And I would just point out to people who poo-poo it, the appellate division in the civil case that Trump had that was brought by the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, the appellate division reversed Judge Engoron, who was the crazy judge who presided over that case, a number of times. And they were very hostile to the state at the oral argument. We don't know what's going to happen yet, but I would bet that when we get the decision on the civil case, the whole case may get thrown out. And at the very least, that huge award that Engoron ordered against Trump is going to be, I think, substantially discounted. So, and the other thing I point out to people is the only, in New York, I would say, somebody who was politically more of a hot button or at least on a par with Trump, as far as that's concerned, is Harvey Weinstein. Mm. I mean, that was one of the biggest scandals. It's a scandal that has a name after it, right? The whole Me Too thing that went on for years. I would just point out that last year, the Court of Appeals in New York threw out Harvey Weinstein's conviction because he didn't get a fair trial. So if they were just going to do the political thing, they would have rubber stamped that. And instead, what they did was they reversed it. So yeah. I have hope that as you go up the chain, you're going to get better results. Plus, the New York courts know the Supreme Court may review what they do, which, you know, when you know someone's going to check your homework, you usually do a better job.
I keep telling my son that.
How's that working out for you?
He's a freshman in high school. We learned a lot of lessons in the first semester. We'll put it that way.
Yep.
He did okay.
Yep.
Andy McCarthy speaking with us right now. I want to take this down to like the 100 level course of the legal system, even before the 101. Because we hear about these judges and you're like, good grief, how can they be as political as they are? Like, what retribution do voters have or do people who might find themselves in these courtrooms have? And also, when we go through elections, the question I get the most from people is like, Annie, tell me about the judges that are on my ballot, like voting to retain and so on and so forth. Like a Mershon and Engoron, all of these people, we can go down to Georgia and talk about some of the system down there as well. Are any of these people, these names that American voters and taxpayers have come to know in New York or throughout the course of the system, are these people accountable to the voters or are they appointed to their positions to where some other action, maybe from a state legislature, would have to take place to remove them?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that you said in teeing up that question is probably the most important thing of all, which is the voting part of it. In the federal system, judges are appointed, right? So they don't face the voters. They don't get elected. They have to be vetted by the Senate, and that at least puts them through a process where it's expected that they're going to represent that they will not take politics into account when they're exercising their authority. Now, you can argue that, you know, they say whatever they need to say to get confirmed, and then they do what they do once they get on the bench. But at least it shows that there's an expectation there that, you know, the senators ask the questions and the appointees answer them in a way that tells everybody taking politics into account is a bad thing, which is why I like an appointed system a lot better than an elected system for judges for that reason. I think we get to at least examine them and we get a shot at knocking them out if they're, you know, if they have radical backgrounds. The problem with electoral systems where the judges get elected rather than appointed is that politics is basic to the mix, right? I mean, right. They actually get elected to their positions, which at least creates an appearance that they're expected to make their ruling something that would be appealing to the voters, at least as they see that. Whereas a judge's job, the reason judges are insulated from politics in the federal system is we want judges to be able to make the unpopular decision if it's the right legal one. And if you're getting unpopular decisions that are the right legal one, then Congress has a chance to change the law, you know, to meet what the public's expectations are. But we don't want judges taking politics into account. It's hard to make them do that in a system that's political to begin with. And then the other problem, Annie, is where this has really become problematic in all the places that you mentioned, and you're city of St. Louis as well, but, you know, Atlanta, New York, et cetera, these are one-party jurisdictions. So, yes, in a sense, these judges answer to the voters because they're on the ballot, but if there's no Republican Party to speak of, then the election's kind of a sham, right? Because mm-hmm. they're not really running. Once the Democrats pick them and put them on the ballot, they're going to be elected. And the Democrats tend to pick, you know, they don't pick Antonin Scalia's, right? They what they do is they have, you know, you have these club party lawyers who do stuff for the party for 15 or 20 years. And the big plum they get at the end is they get to be on the bench and wear a black robe and everything's very cute.
Yeah.
But it's not really, they may come away and say that, you know, they're responsible to the voters. But I think they're really responsible to the party because they don't have any practical opposition as far as the voters are concerned.
Yeah, I think that the Americans, certainly Trump supporters, have learned a lot about the justice system in the last couple years and maybe can use that knowledge or at least the inquiry of how does this work to put us in a better position to make better decisions when it comes to who's sitting on those benches and sending the people to the Senate or to the state legislatures, those individuals who oversee these appointments. I wanted to ask you one more question before we let you go. We're speaking with Andy McCarthy. We're very grateful for your time today. I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on Jack Smith, who resigned from as Trump's case is winded down and he's in the position that he's in right now, which is pretty much out the door anyway. Your thoughts on Jack Smith, the reports that could potentially be released regarding Donald Trump and the cases that he's faced a week out of his inauguration?
Yeah, well, so as far as the reports are concerned, I'll deal with the last thing that you said at the end, because I think that's the easiest thing to deal with. What difference does it make at this point? You know, 3 weeks before the election, he filed a public submission in the January 6th case that was 2,000 pages long that laid out his whole case. So what more is he going to say in a final report that he hasn't already said there? And as far as the Florida case is concerned, you know, he indicted that twice. He litigated it for over 2 years. Everybody understands what his case was and why he made the charging decisions that he made, which is why special counsels get to file a report. You know, most normal prosecutors don't get to file a report. When I was a prosecutor in New York, if I decided that we didn't have a case against someone, I would have a confidential conversation with my chain of command and say, I don't think we should bring this case. And if they agreed with me, we would drop it, but we wouldn't go public with the evidence because you're not supposed to do that in the Justice Department. With special counsels, they make a rule that they can file a report at the end the rule says it's supposed to be a confidential report, but because you're dealing with public officials and there's clamor from Congress and from the media, it's become pretty routine that these things get released. I think there's a big difference between a special counsel investigation where the special counsel actually filed charges and one where he didn't. You know, when the special counsel doesn't file charges, then you could say, okay, we have a public official who was investigated for potential criminality. This is the only way we're ever going to find out what happened here. Give us a report. And then the attorney general can decide how much of it should be public, consistent, and it's never consistent, with the Justice Department's usual rules that you don't publicize evidence against people that you don't charge. But it just seems to me when it's someone like Jack Smith, who has filed numerous indictments and then filed numerous public court submissions explaining why he brought the charges and what his theory is and who his evidence, you know, whose witnesses are and all that stuff, what do we need a report from him for? You know, he laid all that stuff out already. And I don't think, you know, everything we saw from Jack Smith is that, I don't think he's a stupid guy at all, but I do think he's a zealot, and a zealot doesn't leave anything on the cutting room floor. Yeah. You know, I think if Jack Smith thought he had a crime, he put it in the indictments. So what are we going to learn from, you know, the reason he couldn't get to trial in Florida, and maybe the whole history of this would have been different, is because he overcharged the case. Like, he threw everything, including the kitchen sink, into the indictment. So what are we going to learn from his special, you know, from his final report that we don't already know?
Mm. Well, if he was anything, he was certainly useful for an amount of time.
He was.
Yeah. I mean, if he were successful, I think that it wouldn't be Donald Trump swearing the oath of office next week. I think that's kind of what we all assume that this was supposed to be, and it didn't happen. So, but he gave it his best, I suppose.
He underestimated the difficulty of prosecuting a president. And as a result, the thing he really didn't anticipate was the immunity ruling. And the real, you know, everybody says Smith did all this stuff and he comes away with nothing. And that, in the end, that's true. But I don't think it does justice to the way this played out, because the most important thing that happened in the 2 years of lawfare was the Supreme Court. First, the appeals process of the immunity froze everything for 7 months so that Smith couldn't do anything. He couldn't get those cases to trial. And then at the end, the Supreme Court gave sweeping immunity to presidents, which made it practically impossible for Smith to do anything. So, yes, you know, he's a complete failure in the end. But, you know, the way this played out, he probably, the indictments helped Trump get nominated. You know, they completely stopped the momentum of every other Republican in the field, including DeSantis, who, you know, started out pretty well, at least in the polls. And then I think the Democrats thought they were going to get phase two of lawfare, where they were going to get these cases to trial and really bury Trump. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah, it's been something to take in. And I guess the next time you and I talk, we will have a new president. It's just kind of an amazing roller coaster ride arc that we've been on. And your expertise has been so valuable to our audience. Andy McCarthy, thank you for being with us today, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you so much, Annie. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Annie McCarthy, contributing editor at the National Review, Fox News contributor, of course, host of the McCarthy Report. Check out his podcast. Very knowledgeable guy there. And I will also add, he's not like some Trump sycophant. So I know a lot of people who probably don't listen to the show all the time just think that we're here to praise Trump. And we are certainly here to praise Trump on the praiseworthy things of Donald Trump. But honest and fairness and objectivity, those are important, too. And we are so grateful for Andy McCarthy's time each time he's willing to come share his expertise with us. All right. If I told you we weren't going to listen to Biden's speech when we come back, would you be more likely to listen? Or if I told you we were, that should be the break, the poll for the break. He's talking from... He's giving his last foreign policy speech. They say it's his last. God willing, it's his last, because if he has to come back and give another one between now and then, I'm worried about what that might be. It seems as though, I don't know how much you've been listening to it right now, it's kind of a victory lap of sorts. These are all the things we've done.
More or less. gone on quite a bit. Lots of applause. At the very beginning was a lot of pomp and circumstance. You know,
sure.
Blinken came out and was like, here's Joe Biden, and he did a great job. And everybody's like, yay!
People do those things.
And he stood there with the teleprompter in front of his face.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, the screenshot of Antony Blinken, and I would be curious to look at other networks to see if they had the same shot, because if there's multiple cameras in that room, maybe Fox did that on purpose. I don't know. Antony Blinken standing behind the podium with the presidential seal on, getting ready to invite Joe Biden to take over and deliver this speech. And in the shot, you see Antony Blinken clear as day in front of this podium, and Joe Biden is standing directly behind the teleprompter that's up there. And it's just, you know, a skinny pole that goes up to this like rectangular shape, clear plastic looking thing, rectangular plastic looking thing. And it's just completely covering Joe Biden's face. Joe Biden's head was a teleprompter. It's Ryan was in here. He goes, this is an SNL skit in the making. We'll maybe dip in on the break here and see what we can see and bring that to you if there are highlights. If it's just a U.S. adversaries are weaker today. Lies detected. We'll check it out for you. Maybe we'll filter it. Maybe we won't. But more Annie Fry Show right around the corner. YouTube live chat poll. Should the Trump inauguration go on as traditionally planned? Yes or no? We want to know what you think. Join us on the Annie Fry YouTube. New Year's resolutions. Do you have any? Maybe it should be to join us on the YouTube. There, I made one for you. And if you come join us on the YouTube, you can say that you did it. You completed your New Year's resolution. You could be done for the year. How about that? Go to youtube.com/@AnnieFry. You'll see that we're broadcasting live there right now. And the poll is located in the comment section, the live chat portion of that YouTube broadcast. And you can tell us if you think it should go on as planned. Yes or no? We got 211 votes in halfway through the show. And it's kind of a leaning heavily on one side or the other. So you can tell us what you think. We'll be back. And Ryan Wiggins back in studio with